You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
In this session, we are going to talk about what does it feel like to belong to a community. And we are delighted to have three key speakers and a very choice handful of wonderful people who have lived and are living in and with community. And you will also get a chance to tell your story a little bit later. Our three speakers are Duncan Morrow. Duncan is a member of Corrymeela Community in Northern Ireland. He is a professor in politics and director of community engagement at the University of Ulster. Jonathan Herbert is a member of the Hillfield Friary Community, a former member of Pilsden Community and the chaplain to Gypsies and Travellers in Dorset. Welcome both. And Ruth Harvey is the leader of the Iona Community. The Iona Community is a dispersed community based largely in Iona, but with members throughout the world. Ruth is our leader with responsibility for theological direction, and she offers programme and worship. Ruth is going to get us started.
And this is Leanne, one of our communications managers. So that's who you've just been meeting. And we will be joined after I've spoken with Duncan and Jonathan, a little bit setting the scene. We're going to introduce you to some of the Iona community's members and staff who live community in a variety of different contexts. And we'll explore those as we go. But first of all, we were delighted when Corrymeela suggested we should contact the Hillfield Friary. Why not get them along and hear someone like Jonathan Herbert talk about what it's like to live in community? And we thought, that's a great idea. And we then also thought, how about the Corrymeela community, a kind of cousin community to the Iona community? Let's bring somebody along from Corrymeela who can tell us a little bit about what it's like to live and work in an intentional Christian community. In today, in a world where if we watch our news feeds, the disintegration of life, the isolationism, the loneliness that is often around, pushes us towards finding solutions for the journey of life, often by ourselves in our micro contexts. And I think what you're going to, I hope, have a little taste of here today is the stories from those of us who have begged to differ, who would say that it's in and through community that we live our fullest lives, particularly for those of us here from the Iona community and other communities inspired by the gospel of Christ. And so I'm going to ask Jonathan to begin, and then he'll pass on to Duncan, just to give us a little flavour of what the Hillfield Friary actually is. Tell us about your community, your relationship with it, a little bit about that community, and what it means to you to live in an intentional religious community today. And we're going to pass the mic along.
Yeah, good. Hi, everyone. Great to be here with the Iona community and with Corrymeela, communities I've long admired from afar, really, so and been inspired by. So great to be with you. Hillfield Friary, I came to live there, I think, nearly 15 years ago. And prior to that, I'd spent 13 years at a place called Pilsden Community. If you're interested in living community, Pilsden are actively looking for people to come and live there. Hillfield is such a vibrant community. It's full at the moment, but of course, come and visit us, and there will be space for people to come and join us and live intentionally with us. What do we do? What are the three things, perhaps the three main things about Hillfield? First thing is prayer, a life of prayer. There's been prayer said there by Franciscan brothers and others for over 100 years. The friary was founded in 1921, looking really offering hospitality to people who are homeless. In 1920, there were 70,000 people on the roads, post First World War, loads of them with shell shock from the First World War. You'd probably call it we'd call it post-traumatic stress disorder now, and it offered a quiet space for people to come, a prayerful space. So prayers happen, meditation, 7 o'clock in the morning prayer, 7:30, then breakfast, lunch, midday prayer, Eucharist, lunch, evening prayer, 5:15, more food, and then Compline at 8 o'clock in the evening. So strong pattern of prayer that holds and binds the community together. What else do we do? We welcome visitors. We don't actually run a retreat house, although it's a really peaceful place and there's a pattern of prayer to tie into, but we're a community that people love to come and be with us. If you're with us, somebody will throw you a tea towel and say, can it help with the washing up? Or if you want to do a bit of weeding in the garden, you can do that. You can join in. And when you sit down, you're with the whole community. You can be just sitting next to a friar. You can be sitting next to somebody who's homeless. You can be sitting next to a member of the community. So big emphasis on welcoming people there. The third thing is since really 2005, we've had a big emphasis on conservation and ecological justice. Real big emphasis on that. We've now have 45 acres of land which we farm very carefully and gently. We've got some lovely Shetland cows who we have, firstly, not for milk or their meat, but so they graze the land to create more biodiversity. We've got probably the best wildflower meadows in Dorset. It's a very beautiful space. 7 species of orchid this year we counted in one tiny field. Absolutely beautiful biodiversity there. And we lay our hedges, that kind of thing. We've been digging ponds to keep the uplands flooded. 30 seconds. Ah, what do I love about community? So much about it. And I think something really important is a rule of life. Something, you know, boundaries, patterns, rhythms. There's a rhythm to each day, to each week, to each year. The agricultural, the rhythms, the cycles of nature, and the rhythms of the church's year too. Great. So I'm going to introduce Duncan now. From great pleasure to introduce you from Corrymeela.
Thank you very much. I feel obliged to say some words that the Pope apparently said to the Dalai Lama when he looked. He said, as you take the spirit of the crowd into you, and when you look and have to say, you're a very rough looking crowd. So I want to say a little bit about Corrymeela as a kind of a lived experience. But before I do so, I want to talk about its origins as far as I now understand them. There were two. One is in the life of the founder of the community, Ray Davey, who found himself as a very young chaplain to British Army, captured in Italy. And he became the chaplain to POW camps in where he was put. And I'll tell you in a second, it becomes important. And he... As a chaplain, you were allowed to go outside the camp to go, because these camps were in fact different places. And his camp was in Dresden. And he was in Dresden on the night when the Allies bombed Dresden and found himself in an enormous set of contradictions. At one level, for him, a war which was at least, shaped as a moral enterprise. And you're in Dresden when 150,000 people are bombed by your side. And his conclusion was not that the Corrymeela community should exist, but that only Christian community will save the world. That it is literally as apocalyptic as that. That unless we live and find our way to a new way of living with each other, that is the nature of the human dilemma that we now face. And this is not nicey-nicey stuff. This is a real thing. The second route, I suppose, was living in Northern Ireland, where a society that was going through a set of realisations about itself, I think, after the war, certainly for those on his side of the church, about what Protestants in Northern Ireland had been part of, how we had lived there, who we were, And what did Christian community mean in that context? And so at a certain point in the 1960s, which was a pivotal moment, the community was founded. Not as based on the Iona model, which was this was a lived community in a certain space, but actually most of the members lived outside. And it was about a commitment to a way of living with each other. And I suppose that duality has been part of our story ever since. Ruth might talk a little bit more about that, about the difference between what is community where you're living day to day with each other. Because the reality of the word community is it is another way of describing how we are to live together. How are we to think about that? And that in the context of close and intimate relationship is one thing that is also then what does it continue to be when we go? Corrymeela's great phrase, there were a set of phrases. One was we were a question mark to the churches, which was a relationship with the churches, which was as people who were ourselves part, but moving with questions in the middle of that. The second one was Corrymeela begins when you leave, which was that this was an opportunity to be together in a certain spirit, which then the question was, well, what does that do for us when we go out of there? So it was always moving in that outward facing direction. For, I suppose, the life, all I can say to you is all life is there. All life is there. Don't romanticize this. This is about a choice to live. For us, it has been about a choice to persist with a certainty that only if we live in this context of forgiveness and of love and of following Jesus do we find any way through the alternative way of doing these things. So this is a weak thing rather than a strong thing. Second thing, the peace context of Northern Ireland gave us something to do, but I think sometimes it made us think we were the good guys, rather than what we had to offer was a way to live in the middle of Northern Ireland, which might give us all a way forward, which was important for us. And actually, I think since the peace process, been a very useful and thoughtful experience for us, which I think we've come to the conclusion that community isn't just the name on the tin. It is the purpose of why we exist. It itself is the purpose why we exist, and it gives us the purpose outside ourselves, because living in this way is what something is to get some feeling of what the kingdom might be about, both in its moments of judgment and its moments of realization among us. So I'll talk about that in more practical math, but that's fine.
Thank you, Duncan. And I hope you're going to get enough of a snippet to be really curious and to want more. And Jonathan and Duncan and others will be around maybe just towards the end if you want to hear more about these communities. I'm going to just say a little bit about the Iona community as a third example. And interestingly, and maybe unsurprisingly, similarly to the Corrymeela community, our story is rooted in the experience of a particular person. George MacLeod was a Church of Scotland minister, had been an officer in the First World War, and had witnessed the devastation of war and became a pacifist as a Presbyterian minister, came home from there and became a pacifist and an ardent and preaching pacifist. He then eventually became a minister in Govan in the shipbuilding part of Glasgow in the 1930s. And witnessed there the devastation of poverty at the time of the financial crash. So both of those threads, the devastation of war, the devastation of poverty, and the impact on ordinary people's lives, compelled him to say, what is ours now to do as people of Christ, as people of the gospel? He knew that there was a ruined Benedictine monastery on the island of Iona, where Columba had come in 563 and brought Christianity through a circuitous route from Ireland to Scotland and thence to the north of Britain, meeting Augustinian Christianity from the south. And those are other stories for others to tell. On that site of Columba's monastery, MacLeod decided, literally, by force of nature, let us rebuild that ruined Benedictine monastery as a sign of hope, as a sign of life in the face of war, in the face of the devastation of poverty. And so with unemployed craftspeople from across Scotland and with local people and with trainee clergy year on year, with a pause for the Second World War, they rebuilt the living quarters of Iona Abbey, and you can visit there and stay there, and you're welcome. And there's lots of information here about that. Living there, you will meet some of these people who live a countersign. And I think that would be my one thread here, that we are all, as Christians, called to live a countersign to the prevailing cultures that usually favour the powerful. We are called to live a countersign. And if you visit Iona Abbey, hands up if you've done that already. Hurrah, look at that. Keep coming. You'll meet these people who are living a countersign. They're living their lives outside in. They're living a very common life. They are committed to the common life. So more than a job, they work and they live in community together to show that living in community, sharing the very stuff of life, is the way that we can transform the world for the better for the people who are the most marginalized. So that we share, we equalize our pay as far as possible in solidarity with all those whose pay scales are, whose income is dictated by the wealthy. We try to minimize our pay differentials. We try to live as ethically as we can and as spiritually as we can, that every moment of our life is worship. I'll let these guys say more. The other people you'll meet here are members of our community. Hands up if you're a member or an associate member of our community. Hurrah! You also can be a member of our community. We are also called to live a countersign, but we live not the common life as our colleagues on Iona or at Camas on Mull. We live by a rule of life, as Jonathan mentioned. And so we are held to account in our local small family groups across the globe. There are 272 members. There are 2,000 associate members. And if you're a member of our community, you're committed to living a rule of life which says, let's pray and reflect on scripture daily. Let's work for justice and peace, reconciliation and wholeness. Let's talk with one another about the stuff of life, what we do with our money, what we do with our time, what we do with the earth's resources. And let's work together to enhance our community, not for the sake of the community, but for the sake of the gospel of Christ. And so, thank you. All of us are living this countersign. It's messy, it's really hard work, especially when you're being asked to live it in public, which our staff at our centres do. It's also hard to do it in private, where nobody sees, but you're doggedly continuing to do your quiet activist work as a prison chaplain or as a physiotherapist or as a priest or as a chaplain in some other context or as a as a social worker in whatever walk of life you're in. Our contention is that we are not unique. We are simply particular. We have a particular story, but there are many others like us living this countersign across all the world's religions. You don't have to be a Christian to live this way. We simply do it in a particular way, and we're dedicated to that path, not because we're committed just to the Iona community, but because we believe in that vision of a peaceful and just world where all of life can flourish. I think that is where I'm going to stop. And I'm going to now pass the question out to you. There will be time for Q's and A's. The last quarter of this session will be Q&A. But for now, we'd like just to kind of shift the energy a bit. Can you hear outside at the back? A little bit. We'll try and speak a little bit. Is that a little bit better? So those of us using the mic, it's like a lollipop. Is that what they say? Have you ever lived in community is the first question. You know, that might be an intentional community like the ones we've described. It might be that you found yourself with neighbours with whom you shared food, a washing machine, a car. It might be that you've lived in a shared housing or a housing cooperative. It might be that if you think about the house in which you live and with whom you live now, if you live with others, either as neighbours or with others in your own home, to what extent could you call that community? My question is, what has your experience, what does the word community mean to you in terms of your experience of life? You might have lived in an intentional community or unintentionally find yourself in community. What has surprised you about living in community? And what has delighted you? What has really fiercely challenged you? So just take a minute to acknowledge the experiences of community in the room in twos and threes, and you've got about 7 minutes for that, and we'll come back singing. Is that okay? Anything else I've forgotten? Okay, 7 minutes.
Well, that sounded like a very lively set of conversations, and the sun came out, so that's amazing. If you are already finding yourself community curious, on the way out, my colleague Caitlin has got a little gift bag about more information about how to be part of a community, so don't forget to see her. But meantime, we're going to hear from some of our staff and volunteers and members and hear, well, they're going to dish the dirt about what does it feel like to actually live in community. Sharon, tell us who you are and tell us how on earth you ended up on Iona. Okay.
My name is Sharon. My pronouns are she, her, and I am one of the program team at the Iona Abbey on the island of Iona. I have always known a bit about the community. I've used their wild goose resources, and I was depressed one November and I was scrolling through Facebook and there was this job offered and my heart leapt and I found this wonderful sense of joy that my gifts could actually be used on Iona. So part of the job when you work on Iona is to live in community. And in all honesty, I was absolutely attracted to that as well. I had been divorced for many years. My adult children had finally launched. And I was wanting to be in community in a deeper way than I had been before. And oh my goodness, it happened. Absolutely. Let me just say, wherever you go, you bring yourself. You cannot escape yourself when you go somewhere, which is basically a way of saying to live in community means you are constantly being invited. Am I being invited to speak my truth or to simply breathe deeply and let it go? Am I being invited to put up a stronger boundary, or am I being invited to be a bit more flexible? Am I being invited to do someone's dish again because I know how hard life has been for them lately? Or am I invited to say, hey, your turn to do the dishes? I'm always asking myself, what is God inviting me to do? On my best days, God is inviting me to walk my talk, to practice what I preach. On my worst days, my housemates get to practice their walk and their talk and strengthen their muscle of forgiveness. I do want to say, do I have 30 seconds? Living in community is not an antidote for loneliness. I want to make that very clear. However, living in community is an opportunity to live deeply. When you live in community, you witness one another's lives. And the gifts that come from that, you know already that the best times of life, of your growth, of your deepening, of your inspiring, often comes through hard work. But boy, is it worth it. Can I hear an amen? Amen.
Sharon has loads of stories and she will be here the next couple of days. Come and find her. Fiona Fidgen is a trustee of the community, but you're going to introduce yourself and tell us, what does being in community mean to you?
Hi, I'm Fidge. I don't live in community. I live in the northeast of England, but I belong to the community. I'm a member of the Iona community. And what does that mean? On a practical basis, members kind of meet together in what we call family groups. Depending on where you are in the country, you might meet on Zoom. Praise the Lord for Zoom. None of us had heard of Zoom 3 years ago, and now we all Zoom in and out everywhere. But we tend to probably meet about monthly. And we account to each other, as Ruth said, when you belong to the community, we account to each other. And we account to the rule of being a member. Now, here's a wee secret about me. I was totally rubbish at keeping rules as a child in school, and I'm totally rubbish at keeping rules of the Iona community. I like to think about it as a way of life as opposed to the word rule. I might have to ask Jonathan where the word rule kind of came from, because I think it's an old monastic tradition. But it's a way of life, and so we account to each other, and I guess that's one of the things really about being a member, is it's a place where we have deep conversations. And I joined the community because partly because I wanted to, I was interested in the community's youth work. We have a great history of youth work. But I was really looking for kind of Christians with whom I could have honest, vulnerable, deep conversations. And I wasn't finding that in my local church. And I wanted to be kind of accountable to people. So we account for the use of our money, how we disperse our money and what we do with the money that we have left over. And we know that some students don't have any money and some people earn a lot of a big salary and they have lots of money. So we account to each other for the use of our money. We account to each other for the use of our time. What does it mean for us to spend our time wisely? And, you know, when is a little challenge for you in your church congregations. Did you ever talk about the use of time? How we live the one life that we are gifted and given. And we have a commitment to peace and justice, which is probably what the community is well known for. And every year we account to each other and we account to our leader, Ruth, and you become a member of the community for a year. And then every year you renew that membership in a process we called With Us. Are you with us? And some people take a year out or some people leave. And it's the ebb and flow of a life of community. That's the kind of practical reality of who we are and what we are about as members dispersed from Iona, the island.
Thank you. Chris Mannell is a staff member on Iona and he is going to tell us who you are, Chris. And I know you work hard for peace and justice, so tell us how the community bolsters you in that.
Hi everyone, my name's Chris. I'm the admin person on Iona, so if any of you are booking to come, you may well be in correspondence with me. I look forward to that. Peace and justice has always been close to my heart, but what I found through being part of the resident community on Iona, our pattern of worship really reminds me on a daily basis in our 9 a.m. services and our 9 p.m. services about the things that really relate my faith to my life and all aspects of my life. And the issues that the Iona community holds really dear to its heart, those of care for creation, for justice and peace. As part of our pattern that we have on a weekly basis, our evening services every Monday evening are a service for justice and peace. And in those, they're generally led by one of our staff or volunteers working with us for between 6 months and maybe only 3 or 4 weeks. And they focus on a particular issue and really help us to think about what we think about that issue and what we can do about it in a very active and practical way. My own particular passions are really around Israel-Palestine, the situation, the plight of the Palestinian people, and also environment and the challenge of the climate emergency. And as part of the community, we have 9 common concern networks, CCNs. So I'm a member of 2 CCNs, the environment one and the Israel-Palestine one. That provides an avenue for us to meet, as Fidge mentioned, on the inevitable Zoom. We meet once a month, we share experiences, we pray together and reflect on what's going on in those different fields and think about how we might bring our expertise and action and our time and resources to bear on those issues.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. 2 of our members, Ali and Pete, have community. It's been woven into their lives for as long as they can remember. Ali and Pete, put your hands up. You'll notice that community does not mean that they need to sit together. Ali, will you tell us a little bit about... Great.
Our experience is perhaps... different again. We were part of an intentional Christian community in the 80s for 5 years. And I think when we had to leave that community because of work, we spent most of the rest of our life looking for those relationships. For me, It was because you could have robust discussions and disagreements, but you had to get up and pass the marmalade in the morning to each other. And my experience in most other Christian and other organizations was that if people disagreed with you, they walked away from you. And there was no way of finding a way forward. So it was the fact that within the community, what bound you together was more important than any differences. And I longed for that depth of relationship when we left. We had, all through our married life, people live with us. Sometimes because they needed a bit of support, sometimes because we needed a bit of support, sometimes because it just was a good way of using time and energy. It doesn't take four times as long to cook for four times as many people, and it can release time. So we then found a home in the Iona community, and we went up and worked there.
Yeah, okay. So I took slightly early retirement, and you weren't doing any paid work, were you, outside the home? So we went up and worked as part of the resident group, as part of the community. And so instead of having a house full of people that sort of we were in charge of, we had a room in a shared house with nine people from five continents between the ages of about 23 and 70. So, yeah, it was pretty straightforward. Never any disagreements, obviously. And that was some of the most fulfilling part of my life, I think, of work that I did. I spent my life carrying suitcases, unblocking drains, replacing light bulbs. But I've got to go faster than that. I loved it. Coming back out of it, what I'm supposed to talk about, we've got 15 seconds to talk about it. We're recovering still. and still trying to work on those relationships and being challenged by people in our family group, in the rest of the community, who inspire us to keep going on the themes of peace and justice, of accounting to one another, all those things we could do on our own if we ever got round to it. But actually being committed to one another to do that is a fantastic way of actually meaning it can happen. And I think I've really appreciated that, because there is nothing there's nothing putting off tomorrow. No, what's the phrase? Double off to tomorrow. Well, you could put off till the week after. Yeah.
Very good, Pete. Touché. Thank you so much. We have about 15 minutes, folks, left. We're going to really turn back to yourselves. I'm going to give Duncan and Jonathan a heads up. We'd love just to hear from you a couple of responses to what you've heard. And I guess a question I have got, maybe to kick off the Q&A, is, you know, is this just a pipe dream? You know, are we just kind of playing at houses here? Or to what extent is living in community really living a countersign in a world where we need hope, where we need more than optimism, more than just a sprinkling of sugar? We need a real boost of that deep energy, like the nectar of a good malt or the nectar of a good bowl of porridge, that lasts for the whole duration. To what extent do you think Hillfield Corrymeela is a sign of hope in a world so desperately in need of hope? That's a huge question. Jonathan, you say whatever you like. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are, but there's the starting point. And then we'll come to the gathered throng.
Just to say that we never ask anyone to pass the marmalade at breakfast at Hillfield, because we have a silent breakfast, which is great if you want to do a bit of reading or just want a bit of peace. Is it all worth it, putting up with all these people who keep coming through and you keep seeing for years on end, and people who trigger all sorts of responses in you. I think the pure gold of living in community is learning to live with the people you find difficult. I found the people I missed most when they left the community were the people I had most difficulty with. And that was because I had to find compassion for them, and I had to find compassion for myself, because I had to look at myself, what's in me that I don't like there in that person. And that's pure gold. So yeah, community's transformative, has been transformative for me, I think. Somebody once said, living in community, somebody years ago at Pilsen, he said it makes you a better person. And I love that, really, because you, and there are so many great models of people, you know, and we learn from each other. You know, I'm learned from Ellie about being non-binary, you know, and that I'm so grateful. I learned something from Phoenix. By the way, I live with five Franciscan brothers, did I say that? Who've got, you know, over 100 years experience of living together. Brother Felix at the back, say hello to him. And just great, vibrant young person who's come into the community. Or, you know, Brother Malcolm, gentle, wise, kind of archetypal person. But also, you know, I go out and I do some activism, Christian Climate Action. Again, a wonderful community of people, a wonderful way of being church, who meet every morning for prayer at 9, isn't it? CCA. Actions, not words. Just great people. I love the fact I can go out from the community and go and work with gypsies and travellers, and the community supports me in that. And nobody says, where have you been all day? I've had to unblock the drain. Usually they say, you need to unblock the drain. but yeah, it's great. And to sit down, I only cook once a week. Okay, maybe we cook for 40 people, but there'll be two of us doing it. And you only have to wash up once a week. Yeah, great. But I think in a world where our resources are going to diminish and diminish, we're going to need to learn how to share them again if we're going to survive. And that's what we know about already at places like, you know, Hillfield, the places like Pilsden, you know, in you know about sharing your resources at Iona.
Well, so much has already been said. I mean, I think for us this, I think for me, the word contrast rather than counter has become more important. It's not even that I'm against anything. It is that I need to find something which is distinctively different to live from and into in this big world we live in. So the word contrast has become the search for something distinctive which is different and from which to live. What Ali said as well about beyond brokenness seems to me to be really important. The word that in Corrimila has always been huge, been reconciliation. And I think that that has been a way of talking about exactly what you're talking about, which is how do we meet each other after the brokenness, and how am I met after the brokenness that is in me, and is there still a possibility after that? And I think for the world that is such an important message, which means that actually weakness can be given its place as a way to teach rather than just to learn from or to minister to. But also, if we are going to deal with these climate justice issues and these huge issues, actually the problem is probably in our relationships and in the way we work rather than in the environment. The problem is us and how we live together. And actually finding a way to live in that way seems to me worth the effort and a constant reminder. So these communities they're so far from perfect, I can't even describe it, but they are constant pulling back to something. It's like a reminder that brings it back to something that there is something here which matters. And because I'm really clear, we can't do this on my own. This is about done something in which I'm also part of the learning community as well as part of the teaching community all the time. In fact, frankly, much, much more. And anything I say has come from anything I've learned. So that's the way around it goes. So I do think that this, it's not so much these institutions that matter, but finding what this means in the way we live together, making space for it and having structures within which we can do it. Because without some kind of structure and some kind of order with each other, I'm not sure this doesn't get lost in the chaos of the world.
Goodness me, we need a whole lot longer. I mean, I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface of some of these questions. So thank you both, Jonathan and Duncan. Thank you all of our esteemed community members here. There is time for maybe two or three questions. Do you want to shout out your question and then I'll repeat it? Questions of safeguarding and trust and the abuse of power, and how do you trust one another to when things fall apart? How do you safeguard people against those who will abuse their power, the coercive control that we hear of in so many spiritual communities? Who would like to answer that question?
I think the first thing for the Iona, I can only speak on behalf of the Iona community, we take safeguarding very seriously. We have policies and procedures which are good safeguarding procedures. We do EDI training, all our staff and trustees and council and things like that all do safeguarding and EDI training. So we take it seriously because we believe it happens. And I guess that's, you know, how do you trust people? I guess, you know, that's part of the hardship, actually, of being accountable to each other, of talking to each other. And you hope and you trust and you hope. And if you do hear that people are talking behind your backs, then maybe you go and say, I need to talk to you about this. But I need to talk to you about it because it's been painful and hurtful to me. And that's the honest conversations. And that's how we grow, I think, in community, is by having difficult and honest conversations and being vulnerable with each other. But as a community, we take our safeguarding very seriously.
But if I can humbly say, we don't always get it right. And we have had casualties along the way, and we need to learn from those situations. And I think also in our, we have a lived community where we are bound by law. We have voluntary communities of dispersed family groups where we are not bound by law. And it's there, I think, that our vulnerabilities also show, where people meet in each other's homes and don't always know what the power structures are that each other brings. So it's a huge issue. Thank you for raising it. I've got one here and then one there.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Stu. One of the things I found in lots of communities is they fall apart because of sex. Lots of pain around sex. People, you know, relationships break up, then there's huge amounts of pain around the breakup, and then somebody sleeps with somebody else, and what happens there? How do you deal with it? What do you have, social technologies? Do you have practices communally to work with these kind of painful things? How does it not tear apart your communities, or is it doing that?
Well, this is great, easy questions for 4:30, 5:30. Would anybody else like to have a go at that one? Jonathan?
It's interesting. I mean, sex happens, doesn't it? You know, worst thing that can happen at the Friary is two brothers fall in love and leave, because that's two down straight away. And I think we talk about it. Hopefully, I mean, okay, I'll talk about my experience at Pilsden, where I was the leader, and it happened, and we said to people there, because there are a lot of people in recovery, a lot of people who'd been just so hurt by life, a number of people who'd been sexually abused, a number of people early days in recovery. We said, we didn't say no sex, because it happens, but we said, no, we don't have any exclusive relationships in this community unless you arrive as a couple. And if you do get into a relationship, one of you will have to leave, or both of you will have to leave. So that was very clear there. At the Friary, I think it's different. I mean, yeah, our leader of the community has always been a brother who take a vow of celibacy. But in my experience, they're really good about talking about sex, and kind and compassionate. I mean, we had a couple who fell in love 15 years ago, had sex. Chantelle became pregnant, and Brother Sam said, oh, good, we can have a child here at the Friary, because they were in a stable relationship, you know. And they now, we now have four of their children living at the Friary, and their eldest son drives the tractors everywhere, and he was on a mini digger last week. So we every situation is different. Some relationships could be damaging to people, yeah. And so we have to, you know, we maybe one or two more senior people in the community might talk with each other a bit. Maybe somebody would talk one-to-one with a mentor. You know, we just have to kind of, yeah, look at it and be compassionate. But also, yeah, is this going to damage the community if it is likely to be? Is this person's behavior a bit predatory? Well, we would probably be thinking about, yeah, it's time they went. So it's got to be out there. It's got to be out there, but it's got to be handled with compassion and love, and but also some good boundaries too.
There was one over here. Yeah. I wonder if this can stretch to you so you can speak out your own question. Just tell us your name. This will be the last one for us.
Hi, I'm Lena. I'm interested, this is kind of linked to the last question, because my parents met in community and lived in community for a long time and left to have a family because they felt like they wouldn't have the privacy, and they also felt like we hadn't consented to live like that, and they wanted us to grow up in a different kind of way. And I'm really interested in like how those families function within your community, if you give them more privacy. And I've also noted, and with the grace, but I don't know how many younger people are in communities. So they say, if I join your community, would I be the youngest person? And, you know, how does it function for people who are in that stage of their life? I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
Be something for Jonathan to talk about specifically about the lived community experience. So it's the word community is one of the most bastardized words in the English language. In fact, it's catastrophic. When I ask my police officers who I train as part of my work what the word community means, it means everybody. So we're living with everybody. It means some community of interest, some specific group of people. It means in Northern Ireland, some community, which means something very serious. and it means all sorts of different things to people. So first of all, we have to be a little bit careful about what it is. These are communities who have a purpose and a reason outside themselves, which is something like following Jesus, whatever that looks like, in a meaningful sense in these things. So we're not just communities for everything. We're communities who are walking in some kind of external thing. And then each one of them has to work out what that looks like for them, because they are just human groups of people in the end of the day, trying to work out what that looks like for the particular context and the particular challenge that we have. So in my particular case, you know, the issue of whether people stay or go is less dramatic than it is if you're in a lived community, because most of our community members are living in their own lives. And so the sex issue is much less, for example, dramatic in that context. It has to be handled by people in their own lives. And it's very often not necessarily internal. It's connected to people outside. So each one is different. We are talking about what makes it possible for us to take these steps together. And do we want to walk with each other to the next place and to the next piece? And actually, that's why I'm always really keen to say it's absolutely not about perfection. It is about then having to take complicated world-related decisions, which are then complicated. So should people live or should people go? Actually, some communities can accommodate people who live together in families really, really well, and that's how they live and how they grow. Other communities, actually, for example, L'Arche, I know, they say that once you are in that position and you want to set your family, then you have to leave. Not because you're a bad person, not because you've left L'Arche, but because you can no longer do what L'Arche does in its context. So I can't give you an answer. I can only say it's about how it's handled and what's the right answer in the community that you join.
I have 5 more months on my visa, and I will be returning home to Oregon, which is above California. And I have started to think, what would it be like for me to create community when I return? So I would just love for you to also wrestle with that question. I'm starting to think, who can I eat or invite to my table on a more regular basis? I'm renting out my home. Will I get my home back? And who will I invite to maybe live with me? Or who will I meet with more intentionally to provide ritual and rhythm that I have found here on Iona? So as you leave from this place, how might community, how might you take a baby step toward deepening your own experience of community?
Thank you, Sharon. Thank you, Duncan. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you all. We're going to have to pause there. I would like just to use the power that I have with the mic and just to say, I was 5 when my parents moved me to Iona. I didn't know I was going to go and live in a Benedictine monastery in an intentional Christian ecumenical global community. I went to the local school, and it was a revelation then to leave when I was 10 and to discover that's what I'd been doing. And it's been the greatest gift and also sometimes the greatest burden of my life. I think what families choose, how families choose to live, is crucial. And I have to say that the hallmarks of community followed us wherever we went then. We didn't need to be living in an intentional Christian community on Iona for my parents to continue to live in the very particular way that they were choosing to live. Infuriating and remarkable as it is. So it's a fascinating subject. I think there's a huge subgroup in society of kids who've been brought up in community and survived. And delighted. But I take Duncan's point that, you know, we have to be clear what we mean. And for me, it's very clear what we mean. We're an intentional Christian community living together for a period with a particular rule of life at the heart. And it's not for everybody. So please don't come if it's not for you, because it might not go well. But also come prepared to be surprised. And it's not just about living together in these monastic places. It's also about living life in our tented community here. So when you get back to your tents, wherever you are, or your beautiful Airbnbs, if you have one in this rain, may your community living be a beautiful one where the marmalade or whatever it is you pass between one another gets passed beautifully and gracefully with honesty in the relationships. And Leanne's going to close us off.
Thank you for such an entertaining, thought-provoking, wide-ranging conversation. We've been delighted to host you here in Wild Goose. You're very welcome to come back again at 5:30 for a session with Katrina on Pilgrimage of Peacemaking. Tomorrow there'll be a big thing around the corner with loads of space for loads of people. Thank you for coming. Yes, there's evening worship tonight at 9:30. And there are... And if you are interested in community, pick up a little goodie bag or a free CD. Take something with you that will remind you to keep asking questions about what it means to belong to each other. Thank you and good night.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.